You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Auto D Show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Network Studios, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm your host, Otto Daniolo, and tonight is my first show of the new year, or the new decade. So welcome to 2020, everybody. I've been waiting for you. I've got big news on the movie front, kind of, but we'll get to that after I introduce, or after I tell you who my guests are going to be this evening. They are Joey and Freddie from Noonday Devils, Phoenix, Arizona band, who are anxiously awaiting the release of their first album, Bitters, which drops this Friday. However, they've already released the first single, which is called Champion, and I happen to have it right here. So to get the show started tonight, let's listen to Champion from the Noonday Devils on the Auto D Show. Check it out.
Listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
And that was Champion here in the Auto D Show by the Noonday Devils, which is brought to you tonight by the folks at Fervor Records. You can check them out at fervor-records.com. And if you'd like to recommend somebody as a guest for this show, please reach out to me at autod.com or download the Auto D app in your app store and hit the contact button. It's that easy. And now, without further ado, let me welcome to the show Joey Flortom and Freddie Krauntz of the Noonday Devils. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you doing, Adam?
Hello. How's it going?
Doing great. Thanks for coming in. Now, just so people did hear me correctly, it's Joey Flortom.
That's right, yeah.
And Freddie Krauntz.
It's a biblical name.
A biblical name? Yeah. The Joey part of the Flortom.
Both.
So let me ask you, are you the drummer in the band?
I am.
That's awesome.
Yeah, sometimes.
Have you considered, or am I behind the eight ball here, legally changing your name to Flortom?
You got to do it.
I'm the last of the Jakovacs, so okay. I can't really do it.
You can't. Unless you get married and have kids, and then maybe afterwards.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
What if you hyphenate it?
Hyphenate it?
Yeah, if you hyphenate it, that would be awesome.
Floor hyphen Tom? Okay.
Three hyphens.
There you go. Anyway, it's a great name, and I think it's pretty cool. When I was looking at the bio stuff to see that as a name for the drummer, it's like everybody's last name should be what they play.
Sure.
You know, yeah. It kind of helps out a little bit.
It stuck with me from playing back in the day. It just kind of
was it a nickname?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah,
so I mean, Freddie, I'm completely lost as why you're in the band, because your last name doesn't tell me
anything. I know. I've got there's nothing actually interesting at all about that.
Well, tell me a little bit about first of all, I mean, let's just go back and talk about that single. That's a pretty cool tune, and that just came out on the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Did you throw a party? Was there some sort of event?
No. We were
unaware of it.
Right? Yeah, they ambushed us with that. They're like, hey, actually, I just saw the Facebook notification. I'm like, hey, check this out. I'm like, oh, wow.
Oh, our song's up.
Hey, yeah. Awesome. So, that was a cool moment where I get to, you know, spread it around to my friends and say, hey.
Okay. And the album's official release date is Friday.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So are you gonna get together and have hot dogs someplace or something?
On Friday? I think I'm working Friday. So,
are you?
But, yeah. No, so Saturday's going to be the big party.
Okay, cool.
Record release party.
Yeah. All right, and is it a private affair?
Oh, no.
No.
No, open to the public at a Cornish Pasty Company in Tempe.
Okay.
The Beast, it's called.
Yeah.
What time?
I believe it kicks off at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. 9 o'clock.
But come early for the food.
I mean, yeah, and Emperor.
We're not providing food, but
yeah.
Feel free to order some from the restaurant.
So, yeah, Emperor Asshole's playing with us. If I can say that, right?
They're Emperor, yeah, you can say
Emperor.
And they're opening the show?
We don't know yet. Yeah, we might have them play after.
Yeah, we talked about that with them last time. We're like, yeah, I don't know if we're going to play first or whatnot. So
that's kind of cool. Yeah, if you play first, then you get to just enjoy the party.
Exactly. Right. Walk around and talk to people and enjoy them, too. They're a great band.
Yeah.
So. Very cool. And so one more time. That's this Friday, 9 o'clock. What time are doors?
This Saturday.
This Saturday, yep. This
Saturday. 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock is when I believe we're going to start. The first band's going to start, but otherwise the restaurant's open all day
all
long.
Day. Yeah, and what's the name of the restaurant?
Cornish Pasty Company.
Yeah, there's a little sidebar, pool tables. It's dark, red, black. It's awesome. So yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. There's a restaurant side and a bar side, so if people don't like the music, they can go to the restaurant.
That's right. Go have a pasty.
Well, let me ask you this. How long have you guys been the Noonday Devils?
Noonday Devils has been, what, about
four?
4 years now?
Yeah.
And is it the first group you've been in together?
No. We started the Herps about, what, 8 years ago?
Yeah.
Herpetone.
Yeah. That was it.
Yeah, Herps.
That was the first band. That was a four-piece band.
Yeah.
That was, and was it the Herpetones?
Well, it was Herps. That's what we meant, but not, you know, it's like a play on the word a little bit.
Okay.
So. Yeah. But, yeah, we were a four-piece, and it was more of a, I'd say like a straight up, just it was fast.
It was chaotic. That was
loud,
it was
and fast.
A lot more chaotic.
Well, 8 years ago, you guys were pretty young.
It looks that way.
Yeah, we weren't young even then, man.
No.
So, but that was the first time you guys played together. Was it your first band?
No. Well, I moved from Michigan out here, and I found Freddie on, or you found, I don't know which way it went.
Yeah, I can't remember. But
we both had ads up on. On Craigslist, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he's looking for a drummer. I was looking for a band. So I was coming from playing in a band. In
I was looking for a long, meaningful relationship, you know, walks so, on the beach.
8 years later, here we are.
With a drummer instead. So,
So then, we had four people, and then one dropped off, and then the other dropped off, and then we just kept going. So
now you function as a duo primarily.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With the exception of the record, where we had our friend Michael Parkin, who also plays an Emperor Asshole, who we'll be playing with on Saturday. We had him come in and lay the bass tracks for the record, because he's a fantastic musician.
So, And when you guys play live then, as a duo, I imagine, Freddie, you're doing a few things.
No, I'm tap dancing a lot. I use a loop pedal with two different amplifiers on either side of the stage and do my best to keep things separated and cohesive.
But, interesting. Yeah, so you're running a loop in one cabinet while you're playing guitar out of another cabinet.
That Champion that you just played, I think that was the first song that we wrote as Noonday Devils with the looper.
Yes.
Which I was trying to do 6 million different guitar parts on it, and you can hear on the recording, you know, all these different guitar parts, which we do live. We've kind of pared back from, you know, just like, okay, it doesn't need to be the wall of sound every time there. So
that has to be, well, the first time you started playing with the looper, that had to be confusing.
It was terrible. It was learning another instrument. It took at least 3 months of practice.
It's almost like a singing drummer, because I've never understood singing drummers.
Yeah. Like Phil Collins? No.
For example.
I just don't understand drummers, period.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who can actually play drums and sing is pretty incredible to me. So I think for a looper, it's almost like, okay, I'm supposed to be playing, but now I have to focus on really locking this loop together and then playing over it.
Because if it's off, we've had some nightmare shows where you know, when we first started, there's a lot of them.
It still happens.
I mean, it does. I'm trying to play it off like we know what we're doing. But
We've gotten better.
Where the loop is off, you know, like maybe it's clicked too early, or it's like, you know, maybe I slowed down, you know, a little bit or whatever, and it's like playing to a click track, you know, but without like a click track,
with
you know, but with a human click track, if that makes any sense, you know what I mean? So, but we've gotten better, a lot better at it, I think.
We've gotten a lot more comfortable with it, for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, when you screw up, you just have to do it again.
Yeah.
That's happened.
And so Joey just has to go, keep playing, because he hasn't got the loop right yet.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not always my fault. I mean, sometimes it is, you know, but, you know.
Well, it depends who you ask. I mean, sure.
Sure. Now,
Joey, do you do any singing in the group?
I have a backup vocal on the record, and then when we play a couple different, like, songs, I will have just backups. I won't do, like, a full song or anything.
That's we were just talking about that on this little vacation, the tour thing that we did, two-day vacation tour. Yeah.
So one day was vacation, one day was tour.
And
that was, I believe, in Tucson and Bisbee.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we're going there to play music, so it's all a vacation. It doesn't feel like business at all. It's, you know.
Right. But you say you were talking about Joey singing?
Yeah, getting him getting more vocal duties. Yeah.
So you just feel, Freddie, you're carrying too much weight?
I'm tired. I'm tired. I mean, I'm getting old and tired.
Right. Can't you sing some of this stuff? I'm doing everything, man.
Some of these songs he is. I mean, it's incredible. You know, like, to be honest, I mean, to sit there and play with Freddie, like, it's amazing to play with him because...
Well, thank you.
I've said this a million times,
but, you know, usually we're having drinks when I say it, but, like, you know, but... He's doing a lot, you know, and there's songs we've did a Cure cover, and it had like seven guitar parts to it.
Again, we're just
and I'm just going doom, 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 doom. You know, I'm doing that, but drummers know it. Obviously, if you do the same thing over and over and over again, it can be complicated to stay the same thing for 8 minutes and not, you know, speed up, slow down, do whatever, you know. But I've seen him do that, and you know, it's incredible, you know.
Yeah.
We've also screwed that one up pretty bad,
have we?
Too. Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, I remember. I think at timeout. Anyways, yeah.
Yeah,
I know we screwed it up pretty bad once.
That's pretty cool.
At least once.
So now, I understand there's also about four dancing girls when you guys play. Is that accurate?
What's that?
There's dancing girls?
There's, you know, there should be.
Yeah. There should be. You didn't talk about that on the vacation tour? Didn't line that up?
No, we had our girlfriends with us, so yeah. We couldn't talk too much about that.
Haven't got your Vegas version of the show put together yet.
Right.
Cool. Well, now, what kind of guitars do you play?
Right now, primarily a Gretsch Streamliner, semi-hollow body, based off a Gibson ES-335, you know, semi-hollow body. Been playing that since I got it. I got it as a gift from my girlfriend about a year ago, and it's been like
just
the
loving it.
Main duty axe there.
When did you? How old were you when you first picked up a guitar and started to play?
I started playing bass when I was 15 years old. But I also, at the same time, had an acoustic guitar. Mm-hmm. I was taking, guitar classes in high school. But I always fancied myself a bass player, probably for the first, 8 years. I played the bass 8 years primarily, and then decided, like...
You didn't like any of the guitar players
it was hard to write songs on a bass.
Ah, that's true.
It's so much easier to yeah. write on a guitar, you know. So I was writing a lot of songs by myself on the guitar, and then just decided, like, okay, well, you know, actually, this is a lot more fun. I want to do this instead. Mm-hmm. So
now, when you go out with a looper just as a duo, how do you deal with bass? Do you have a bass pedal to change your guitar into a loop, or do you kind of ignore it to a certain degree?
We had experimented with that. I had a pitch shifting pedal to get some like low end, but then we realized with two amplifiers and just using the regular guitar, there's enough meat there to fill up that void. You know, if we had a bass player on stage play with us like one song and then drop out, then yes, you would feel the absence of that. But mm-hmm. I think, you know, coming onto the stage, presenting ourselves as that, and not having at that low end, it's not missed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. Besides, you know, the usual jerks in the audience. Hey, where's the rest of your band?
No, yeah, we'll get that a lot. Yeah, that just happened.
Yeah,
and we had a nice reply for him. But yeah,
I imagine it does.
Yeah. But after we played, I think it was another song. He's like, "Oh, okay, I get it, man. I get it." Because we played a song that had like more than one
loop
part. You know, yeah. So. Oh, okay, all right.
So once they hear it and see it, then they figure out, they realize that you know what you're doing. They don't know what you're doing, but they know you know what you're doing.
Right, right, exactly.
Cool. Now, let's talk a little bit about this record. Was it the first record you guys have done? Our first serious recording?
Yes.
I mean, I know you do home demos all the time. You know?
Right, yeah, because we've recorded, you know, tons of stuff at home. But, yeah, this was the first studio.
I mean, well, you had a producer, actually. It wasn't, right. You just wasn't you guys with your laptop.
Yeah.
This was a real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a brand new experience. I've been in studios, I've worked in studios, but having a producer,
mm-hmm.
that was a completely new for me.
Okay, so. And who was the producer on the record?
That was Mr. Bruce Knoll, aka Slats Pomeroy.
yeah.
And how did it come about that you ended up working with Bruce?
Well, Bruce works for Fervor. He does a lot of. Remastering of the old masters that they acquire, you know, and he gets them a little more public friendly, I guess, you know, cleans mm-hmm. up these old recordings and stuff, and according to him, he heard the demo when they announced that they were signing us. You know, he heard the stuff that they'd played and or that we had played, and he was like, "Hey man, I want to work with these guys." I guess he told Jeff and Dave that, and so we worked initially with somebody else in the Fervor studio, and then the mixes that came back were, I guess, Jeff and Dave said, okay, you know what, we want to get somebody else in here who has got fresh ears, who's not, you know, been involved with the project, mm-hmm. and that's where Bruce came in, and it was awesome. It was great working with him.
Mm-hmm.
It was so good working with him. So.
Well, it's really valuable, actually, to have a new set of ears. But also, yeah. when it's a producer, sometimes they'll come in and they don't just bring ears.
Mm-hmm.
They bring an axe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we need to review this. We got to check this. We got to do that.
Yeah. So, God, I mean, he was hearing things that I was like, dude, what are you talking about? I was like, well, you hear what? He's like, here, you hear this right here. He's like, this has got to go. I'm like, well, I don't hear it anyway. So, yeah, go ahead, man. Get rid of it.
Yeah. He's got an ear.
He's got a golden ear. Yeah.
Well, and when you have a chance to work with somebody like that who's spent a lot of time in the studio, you learn so much.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, next time you guys are in the studio, whether it's with Bruce or on your own, you're going to have a whole different approach.
Absolutely.
You know, when you've had that opportunity.
But that was one of the great things about working with him is even though he is or was the producer, he was tasked to make it sound a certain way, but he was still respectful of our vision.
Mm-hmm.
And we always worked together, mm-hmm. compromised a lot on like, well, you know, it's like, I want this like just drenched in reverb. He's like, well, let's try this.
Right.
try this first here.
Let's define the word drenched
and then
take another look
at it. Right. And then, you know, eventually me just saying, okay, yeah, that does sound better. Okay.
Yeah. That's good. That's fantastic. You know what? I think we should play another cut from the record.
Okay.
And I've got a tune I'd like to play called Stuck.
Oh, right on.
So now, who wrote this, or do you guys co-write them?
I wrote this one.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Let's see. I think this was written as an apology to my then girlfriend of like, hey, look, I'm sorry, I'm just stuck in here writing a bunch of songs.
I'm gonna call it stuck. The house is a mess. Sorry.
And so I'm not gonna come home until I'm done. But I thought since I couldn't think of anything to write, hey, apologizing to you for being here is a good one.
Right.
Okay, I get it. So this is on a record. This has not been released. This song.
Not yet.
So this is like a world premiere.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Of a new Noonday Devil cut.
All right.
Awesome. Check it out. Stuck here on the Otto D Show.
Listening to Otto D coming at you live.
Hey everybody, I'm your host, Otto Dagnolo. Often people I meet seem confused about what it is I actually do for a living. All I can say is grab my app. It's free in your app store. Just search Otto D. That's OTTOD. And then you'll have my whole story, from trumpet to guitar to platinum records and the movie business. In the app, you can stream my music, view a constantly updated concert schedule, and even land work on one of my projects, because that's where I post the job opportunities. You can also stream this podcast and stay on top of all the projects I'm involved in. Check it out and share it with the creative people in your life. Thanks for listening. Now, let's get back to the interview. And that was Stuck from Noonday Devils here on the Otto D Show. A very, very cool tune, guys.
Thank
Dug
you.
That.
Thank you.
And we mentioned while the song was playing, you know, and people couldn't hear us speak, we started talking about where you guys are from. So, Joey, let's start with you. Let's go back to, you mentioned you were from Michigan.
Yes.
Is that where That's you were right. born?
Yes.
Detroit area?
Lansing.
Okay.
Yeah, Lansing.
How'd you get into music, man? What happened?
I think when I was little, I just remember my mom playing a bunch of Motown records. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up on, you know, Four Tops, Temptations.
Cool.
All that great, you know, Supremes. I love Diana Ross. And my dad was into Beatles, Beach Boys, a bunch of surf rock mm-hmm. stuff. So, and then I had these two cousins. Well, I have these two cousins. They're older than me. But when I was a little kid, you know, back then, like, you know, 6-7 years makes a big difference, you know, mm-hmm. when you're 8 years old, you know. So they played in bands. And I just sit there and watch them play.
Impressed.
So, yeah, and they were, you know, they'd play this 80s, you know, 80s music. You know, I was like 8 years old and, you know, buying cassettes of all these like hair metal bands and stuff that they influenced me by watching them play it.
Mm-hmm.
So then got some drumsticks and I was beating up pillows for a while and then got a guitar, I think, when I was 10, I think, 10, something like that. It was some J.C. Penney, like, right. Is it Harmony?
And was it the Harmony ones? Yeah, and so you I think it was a Sears guitar.
Yeah, it was Sears, yeah.
But did you start on guitar then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you still play?
I, not as much as I should. When I first moved to Phoenix, I had like 6 guitars and a Marshall stack and all this
wow.
stuff, you know.
That's and a lot then, for a drummer.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd been playing guitar longer, you know, mm-hmm. I wasn't as good, you know, but right. I like to write songs and play songs
okay,
and
cool.
play guitar and figure out stuff. And but then, you know, tough times, all that stuff gets sold, you know,
yeah.
so.
Well, let's go back to, you mentioned playing guitar at 10, and you had
yeah.
drumsticks, you were beating on things around the house.
Yes.
Back
yes.
in the Midwest,
yeah.
there are basements where
yeah,
you can
absolutely.
Put a kid that you get drums for. That's
uh-huh.
a real problem out here in Arizona where they don't
sure.
have basements.
Yeah, where there's nowhere to get. Yeah, so it was a little weird.
So is that what happened to you? They stick you in the basement?
Yes.
And
yes.
you could just play like crazy and didn't bother anybody.
Well, my parents split up, and then I had we had an apartment, and I'd go actually into the hallways and just play on the stairs and play
you,
on the yeah. carpet. Yeah, they hated me. So, and then I didn't get my first kit. It was late, but I'd play other people's drums, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, mostly guitar until I was late teens.
Okay. Well, what drummers inspired you to play drums?
Oh, man. That's a good question. I love Joe Daniels and Brian St. Clair from this band Local H. They're also a two-piece, but those are the two former drummers that I really like. Who else? Obviously, Buddy Rich. I don't even want to watch him play, you know, because it makes you want to quit. But that guy's amazing, you know. And who else? Obviously, Bonham's in there. You
yeah,
know, all the regular guys are in there, you know.
Yeah.
Albums like When Dave Grohl Stays. To playing drums,
mm-hmm.
I like that guy a lot, you know. So like the Queens of Stone Age album that had him on there, Songs for the Deaf, that was a great record to learn how to play some of those songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more, I forget,
yeah.
but you know, my cousin Derek, you know, I looked up to him and I was like, I thought he was the coolest guy in the world because he was playing these like Pearls, and I was like, that was the only brand I know of, you know. I was
mm-hmm.
like, so cool, you know, watching him play and everything. So probably tried to copy him a little bit, you know, just because I thought he was cool guy. I didn't have
mm-hmm.
any older brothers, so him and Paul were my
oh cool
my brothers pretty much, you know?
So what made you get out here to the desert in Arizona? What happened?
I ride motorcycles, so
mm-hmm.
I was tired of my job back in Michigan, corporate, whatever. I just wasn't happy, so every day I was waking up like saying I hate this, you know. So I did something about it and left, came out here and started working on bikes, met Freddie, and then it's been the same for a really long time. So,
yeah.
Life
is a little better. You're a little happier.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. I wish my family would move down here. You know, my mom and sister and niece and nephew are still up in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you go back very often?
I go back for Christmas, which is the worst time to go back.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's been like -10 when I'm there,
yeah.
you know, and it's like 75 here, you know.
Yeah. And when you go back, don't you wonder why there's still people there?
Yes. Yeah, well, the summer, it's cool. You know, like, yeah. Detroit's, I love Detroit. I love Detroit's music scene and all that, you know, during the summer, you know, spring and fall. But, yeah, winters are brutal. Although when I went back this time, it wasn't that bad. But I've had negative 10 where it's like, well, it's an 80-something degree difference, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
It's ridiculous, man, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gray skies, I don't like those anymore either, so, yeah.
Yeah, you get kind of used to this out here.
It's absolutely. It's hard to get spoiled, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's flip it over to you, Freddie. Where are you originally from?
I guess I did most of my growing up in Albuquerque. Moved around a lot. My dad was in the Air Force. Okay. I was born in Grand Forks, North Dakota, but I think I spent the first year of my life there, and
no real memory there.
Haven't been back or anything, but yeah, we bounced around a lot. Albuquerque was home base a lot. We always kind of gravitated back to there.
Where else did you live?
San Francisco, New York, upstate New York. We lived in Germany for a little bit.
I wondered if you got out of the country. How old were you when you were in Germany?
I was 8 years old. Yeah, 8 years old when I lived in Germany. We were there for about a year, less than a year. Lived in France, but this was, yeah, I lived in France for the south of France for about a year when I was 21, 22.
Wow, you were old enough to appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. It was just this crazy opportunity that came up that, you know, I was actually able to stay there, so I took it. I was like,
So that's not related to moving around with the family?
No.
Can you tell me a little bit about that opportunity? What was it?
I was going to college in Santa Fe.
If you don't
Fe.
Want to talk about it, Fred.
Oh, no, that's fine. Okay. There's certain things I can't tell you about this trip.
Well, we'll get to those.
Yeah, I was going to college in Santa Fe. Met a guy out there. Gaspar was his name. And he was just one of those guys I was like, okay, yeah, we're going to know each other for the rest of our lives. Like, you're one cool mother. Yeah, scratch it. And so anyways, my dad was living in Holland at the time, in the Netherlands, and I was going to go visit him at the end of the school year, and my buddy Gaspar was moving back to France, and he was like, hey, man, he's like, I got a great idea. He's like, why don't we meet up in Amsterdam, which is a great place for a 21-year-old young male. Like, let's meet up there. He's like, I'm going to ship a motorcycle out there, and we can ride that down to where I live. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great, you know. No, that's a horrible idea, man. Forget it.
That had to be fun.
Oh, it was great. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was a blast. Ended up there. My visa had come to an end, and I was going to take a train back up to the Netherlands, where I had to fly back out to the States. And, you know, he and all the friends that I made out there were out drinking on the Mediterranean Sea, and he's like, you know, you got a place to stay and food to eat if you don't want to go back. I was like, well, why didn't you tell me that before I bought this train ticket, man? So yeah, I ended up staying another year. And then at that point, I was just like, yeah, I should probably go back and start, you know, I don't know, adulting.
Yeah. Still, though, man, that's what a great year.
It was an amazing opportunity. It was a once in a lifetime thing, and I'm so glad.
And I think anytime you get to do it away from home, whether that's a town or whether it's a country, you go someplace else. At least you come back with an appreciation for what you like about where you live.
There's, yeah, you know, for sure.
And then maybe a clear sense of what the issues are that you don't like. Because you just see how it's done someplace else or what life is like someplace else. I think that's pretty
valuable.
It's
funny, the things you realize, like the things you end up missing that you'd never in a million years would think. You know, it's like, man, I miss, you know, 7-Eleven nachos. I miss the convenience of being able to just go Bumpy down dogs. The street and, like, yeah, well, just get absolute garbage food. Everything tastes so good out here.
I'm sorry that you missed that.
Yeah.
Of all the things to miss. So now you are a father, is that correct?
That's right. I have two children.
Two kids.
15-year-old son and a 12-year-old daughter.
Okay. That must be a little bit taxing, being in a band and working a job and having kids. And
It can be, I guess, but I don't know. I've got a good working relationship with my ex-wife. As far as, you know, the kids' schedules go, we're both very flexible. There's no, like, you know, no rigid custodial thing. You know, it's like, hey, I want to take the kids to, you know, L.A. for a week. Cool, okay, that's fine. Can you watch the kids this day? It's not a problem.
So that's good.
Yeah, I'm pretty lucky in that respect that, you know, things are fairly simple mm-hmm. with that. But then, nonetheless, there's still the whole part of actually raising the children.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, you talk about adulting, you know, yeah, when you realize you're imprinting on another human,
right,
another hard drive kind of that's blank when they're born. You know, you're kind of putting programs on there all the time.
I don't know. I think they're imprinting on me a lot lately. So,
well, that's part of it. It's part of the process. I think that's part of what makes you, helps you grow up. You start to see your parents, yourself as your parents.
Start to feel their pain.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh.
Well, and has any of that turned into songs? Because there's actually probably a lot of material there.
You know, there was a lot of material when they were first born. There was a lot of material, and that's stuff that's probably gonna stay in the locker because it's
some of
it's pretty sappy. I mean, it's like, you know,
I love you, kids.
I got a kid.
I love my kids.
No, it wasn't quite that bad, but it's very personal, very, very personal.
Well, the thing is, you got to record it because one day you're just gonna want to play it for them.
Yeah,
that's
I guess.
And I can't wait for that day.
That'll be a fun day, you know.
That's gonna be. That's gonna be. To be opened after my death.
You know, but to share, I wrote a song called All I Ever Wanted for my daughter, mm-hmm. Who grew up with her mom, and we lived states apart, you know, so I didn't see her as often. But I remember that I played it for her, like, when she was 16, you know. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it was a cool thing. Yeah, it was just a cool thing to then
sweet.
Share and then go back and talk about. As a young adult, she could then talk about to me about what it was like being the little kid with dad gone and what it was like for me not having her there. And so it gave us a vehicle to go into conversations that maybe we wouldn't have ever brought up.
Uh-huh.
So I thought it was kind
That's funny, man.
Cool.
Have you ever seen Eraserhead by David Lynch?
Yeah.
Now, I didn't understand the movie when I saw it at all. Like, I was like, what is this about? And I read later that it was David Lynch's dealing with having a child for the first time. And it's like, what is your kid supposed to think when they watch that?
So like,
it's insane, man. It's an insane movie. But yeah. Crazy, psychedelic. It just makes no sense.
Speaking of movies, now that you say that, I have to say, because of the day that we're talking here, for 3 years, I've been doing this show, coming up on 3 years. And almost that whole time, I've been talking about this film I was starting to make or going to make, and then I was making.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today's the first time I can say it's done and on Amazon Prime.
Nice. Since really? That's awesome.
Last time I was on my last show, which is 3-4 weeks ago, it wasn't done and up. So now I'm finally finished. There you go, people.
Great.
Nice. No, you don't have to ask anymore.
What's it called?
It is a. It's called the Sweetheart Deal.
The Sweetheart Deal.
It is not an intellectually deep, process or project. It's a very shallow comedy farce. That started as a romantic comedy, and then the leading actor quit halfway through because, you know, it's just everyone's working for free.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to rewrite all the missing bits because I wasn't going to not finish it. So then I had to put myself in as an actor, as the writer, which wasn't ever the plan. And I'm like, now I'm almost one of the stars of the movie, and I was never even supposed to be in the thing. But I got it done. And then
it's up
on Amazon Prime. Go check it out. And I made a movie. So that's my big movie
news.
Cool,
that's awesome. Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
Congratulations.
Thank you. You know, it's a lot of work. You guys have made a record. It's a lot like that, only it's just a lot more work. It's like making
a
bunch of records. Yeah, tons.
That's one of the, that reminds me, though, one of the things that I think when I met Bruce Knoll and we hit it off because we had agreed on that where, as far as singing goes, like neither one of us, Bruce nor I ever started any of this stuff wanting to be vocalists, but ended up, and it just happened that way, you know. And so that's one of the things that, you know, I connected with Bruce on there. But
the
what you're saying
process.
About having to fill in the, you know,
yeah,
the,
just do what you got to do.
That's like,
yeah, you know what, man? I think not to whatever, but I think part of the getting back into drums was me and my friends. There's like 10 of us sitting around, and all of us played guitar. And so, like, well, someone's got to play drums. Yeah. Like, all right, man, like, I'll sell my car, I'll get a kit, you know, whatever, and I'll start playing.
The necessity.
That's where I forgot about that.
And to me, that's a band. See, people talk about when they get older, they try to put a band together, and they complain it's hard. Well, yeah, it's hard because now you just want everyone to do your bidding. But back then, you were a bunch of friends who just wanted to be together.
Mm-hmm.
You were a band of brothers, and you would have been bank robbers or in a band, one or the other.
Right.
And you needed a drummer, so one of you did it. That's because you were already a band. Whether you played or not, you guys were committed to doing something together.
Yeah.
And that's a band. And so it's an interesting process when people talk about getting bands together later and they complain about it.
Absolutely.
It's a very different process.
Yeah, it's weird, like organically, just the way it works, the way the pieces fall into place, you know.
And you guys have been together now for 8 years, right?
8 years,
it's,
yeah.
It's the third iteration of the band. Let's play another song.
Okay.
You mentioned one. I was going to play Flushed, but you mentioned a song where your producer sang background vocals.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Joey as well. Joey's on here.
Yeah.
Bruce Canole is doing the backup vocals.
And which cut was that?
It was Climbing the Walls. I think it's the very last one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wish it was like 30 minutes long.
You do?
Yeah, because I love songs.
Because then we wouldn't have to talk anymore.
Well, no. No, just because, you know, those songs are just like, I love repetitive, like, lyrics, you know, just that just keep going, and then there's more effects, and there's whatever, you
and
know.
And this is just one of those songs you'd love to hear.
I wish it was, you know, 45 minutes long.
Well, it's only 2 minutes and 58 seconds.
So. Well, it was shorter before
we can
Bruce
play
got a hold
it twice.
Of it.
Yeah. It was, yeah. That's
it was shorter.
Yeah,
it actually was, yeah. Because
it's kind of like an, I don't know, you'll know when you hear it, but yeah. It's
okay. Well, let's check it out. Cool. This is Climbing the Walls from Noonday Devils. This is another world premiere. The song's never been played here on the Auto D Show. Check it out.
Listening to Auto D coming at you live.
And that was Climbing the Walls from the Noonday Devils here on the Auto D Show. Pretty cool song.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Lots of different vocals going on. So Joey was singing on that. And
Joey,
Bruce was singing on that.
Bruce, that's right.
And Freddie, you had the lead.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
There were some weird sounds in there, too.
There was, yeah. That's Michael Parkin, again, from Emperor Asshole, making this crazy cello sound with his bass going through this old Sun pedal. Well, I guess it was a brand new
he
Sun pedal.
He just got it.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, God, Michael's just one of those musicians. You're like, man,
Right.
You're really making us look bad.
Right, right.
You're making us sound great, but you're making us look bad.
You're too good,
I think that little riff that's at the end, the little cello thing, or it sounds like a cello, but he was just listening to the track, getting played back, and then just played it.
Just improvising.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's like one take.
Yeah. And it's just like this, like the freakiest, eeriest thing on that track. It's like, whoa, man. Yeah. Makes my skin crawl.
I think he got the vibe instantly. Yeah, he got the vibe of the song and just kind of knocked it out. It knocked the whole record. He did, you know.
Yeah,
he came in and just he just killed it. So.
Well, and as you mentioned, Joey, that tune has a hypnotic.
Yeah, you know, love that
feel.
I love
it. It could be a lot longer and build. Yeah. You know,
even that last that pluck in the guitar, you know, and then like that or whatever at the end is. I love that. I think it could have been. Yeah. I don't know.
I remembered when we were. When we were working on this song and all the ideas we were coming up with it, Bruce was just like, he's like, really? He's like, you want to sample a bowling ball going down an alley? Yeah. He's like, what? How about air raid sirens? Yeah. How about this? It's like, yeah, these are all great ideas. Put them all on there. He's like,
a jet taking off.
It's like, this song's going to be an hour long by the time we're done with it. But,
well, you know, I think everybody on their first record wants to use sound effects.
Yeah.
I did on mine. Everybody wants to. Those things become cliche really fast when you listen back to it over and over.
Yeah, absolutely. The funny thing is that, we joke around a lot. You know, if you ask, like, Bruce, we were just kind of, he's got nicknames for us that I can't say. But, he's a great guy, you know. And but he really wanted to have an air,
the air raid siren.
Uh-huh. He's like, well, listen to it. Just listen. Let me know what you think. So he put it in there, and we're like, nah, man, seriously, no.
It could have worked, for sure.
Yeah, but
it's funny. It's personal. You know, it's just how you feel about it, what it does for you.
Because we were, I think that was the last song we did.
That was
And I think we just kind of got used to the fact that we could actually, hey, we're in the studio, we can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, I mean, you can say that all day, but it doesn't dawn on you until. You know, you're comfortable in
finish line, basically.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we reined it in, though. It could have gotten pretty ridiculous really fast.
Yeah.
Well, now, since this is hooked up with Fervor Records, obviously their forte is to place on TV and film.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So you guys are looking forward to finding your music on some shows.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Do you watch much TV? I mean, is there a show you want to hear your music on?
Watch a lot of Netflix. Yeah, I'd love to be on Peaky Blinders.
There you go.
I love Peaky Blinders.
Wasn't Bruce on there?
I don't think. Oh, was he on Peaky Blinders?
I don't know. These guys play so many songs on so many shows.
Yeah, there's a lot of Fervor.
the Darts were, but they're not on Fervor.
But the Fervor's. Like their Facebook feed has, I mean, it's every day. There's you know, there's so much of their music's in like you said, like movies and television.
So that's going to be cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then let me ask you this. If there was one group out there that you'd love to share the stage with or open for example, who would it be? Joey, you first.
Wow. A lot of the bands I listen to are kind of done, you know, but,
so
I would say
on their reunion tour or their comeback tour, would you?
If Burning Brides ever got together, but actually Freddie already opened up for them before he knew me, and I've always been a little bit jealous about that. Aww. You know, I love their drummer but he plays for Hot Snakes now, which is Hot Snakes, Drive Like Jehu, Rock from the Crypt, any of those like those San Diego bands, which are pretty much all the same person, you know, the same people, you know, in there. But Hot Snakes are playing Rebel.
Or I think that's the Crescent. I don't know. Maybe it's Rebel.
I think it's Rebel Lounge. Right. But I'd love to play that show.
Yeah. When is that?
It's in March.
We got time to work on that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Seriously. Let's make that happen.
Yeah. And then someone else is in.
Get Dave and Jeff on it.
Oh, Windhand's coming. Yeah, is that March?
I forget. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, how about you, Freddie? Is there somebody in particular you'd really dig opening for playing, sharing stage with?
I'm just trying to think of my Desert Island Discs. You know,
what record would you take to a Desert Island?
Right, and you know, it's like, well, also, who could we play with? It's like, oh, could we open for Tom Waits? No.
Yeah, right.
Why not?
He's like, I mean, yeah, maybe we could, but yeah,
he'd leave the room for
sure. It'd be
Are you a big Tom Waits fan?
Oh, I love Tom Waits. Yeah.
He's in my favorite movie.
Yeah,
which Seven one? Psychopaths.
I didn't see that.
You got to see it. He's great. Him and his rabbit.
Nice.
It's perfect. It's
a great film. A second. Is that the one with Christopher Walken?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I did see that one. Yeah. That's good.
He's got a great role.
He's a great actor.
He really is.
He's just like natural at it. But yeah, okay, Tom Waits. No, like I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say Drive Like Jehu. They were my.
And they do reunite every once in a while, but they never play. They don't tour. They did a couple years ago. They played. Not Riot Fest? No.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did Riot Fest.
Okay. Well, since you play Riot Fest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, since you brought up, you know, the Desert Island record, what would be one of those records you couldn't live without?
Oh, I guess. I mean, yeah, you can't pick one. Rain Dogs by Tom Waits, definitely one. Drive Like Jehu's self-titled album. The Jesus Lizard, Goat.
Joey.
Prince and the Revolution.
Oh, man. Prince and the Revolution, there you go.
Yeah, I'd say, what was mine? It was Hang Love by Burning Brides. Circa Now, Rocket from the Crypt.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd have to have some kind of greatest hit Supremes in there somewhere. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
For that whole Motown vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it's of all, I've had records that you love and you listen to them until you just destroy them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you go back and hear them again. It's kind of like, I'm tired of it already. You wear them out.
Right.
And the only record I recall not being able to wear out was a group called Earl Greyhound and their first album called Soft Targets. And I could play that over and over and over, and I realized, you know what? That's the only record I could take to a desert island.
right, to a
desert island, because I've never gotten sick of that record, and I have played it a million times.
Right. I think it's good to walk away though a little bit too though. Yeah. So like, you know, like I was burnt out on. I mean, I still kind of burnt out on like classic rock and stuff. You know,
yeah.
I can't. You know, I've just I played all the Pink Floyd. I played all the whatever. You know, I had a friend that would only play greatest hits, classic rock, and it. I was like, man, there's more albums by these guys. You know, you could discover these. Yeah. Sorry, Matt, if you're listening.
I had a conversation not too long ago about that, about Nirvana. Just the same thing.
If you leave it alone for a bit, you know, and then go back to it. Like, I think I forgot about the Misfits for, like, 6 years.
Right.
And then I went, maybe not that long, but, like, it was probably, like, 6 months.
For
a little while. And then it was like, oh, my God, this is so good, you know.
Yeah.
And same thing with, like, you know, like Pet Sounds, you know, I went back to that and it was good, you know.
Well, I found too, and maybe you guys will as you make more records, that I listen to records so much differently now that I've been making records for 30 years. Mm-hmm. But I go back and listen to records that I had before I ever became a recording engineer or a record producer. Mm-hmm. And so I listened to them as a fan who played guitar, who could barely figure them out off of the record. And then now you go back and listen, and you're like, oh, my God, that record's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And back then, I had no idea it was that good. And other records I thought were incredible really sound awful.
Yeah, that's one, too.
Why did I love that record so much when it sounds so crappy?
And you're playing it in front of friends, like, oh, man, this is the one. And it's, oh, okay.
Well, I remember when we first got together with Bruce about and we're just kind of talking about how we wanted the sounds of the records to go, he's like, come up with some stuff like, some recordings of bands you like with, you know, the drum sound the way you like it, the guitar sound the way you like it. And some of the stuff is like, oh, yeah, check out the drums on this, and we'd listen. And
right.
Oh, these sound horrible.
Right.
Why do I remember them sounding so much better than this?
I think we really like the parts. It's kind of like American Bandstand. Why do you like it? I like the beat. It's like we just liked how it made us feel, so we thought it sounded good because we liked the record.
Attach the sentimentality to it.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. So when are you guys going to do, not to push it, when are you going to do your next record? I mean, this one is just dropping. Do you think you'll record again this year?
I'd love to.
Have you got a bunch of songs in the can?
We do.
Yes.
We do. There's a bunch just waiting to get printed. So
We play a lot of them live. Not a lot, but have.
There's a lot.
There's a handful we play live that will be on the next record.
You do any covers live?
We do some covers. Yeah, every now and then. We'll do a Misfits cover that's, we retooled into a waltz, like a ballroom waltz.
Yeah. People love it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, some people love it.
The ones that don't leave tell us they love
it. Yeah, right. Exactly. But it makes people still there. To have us be, you know, really loud for a half hour, you know, 40 minutes, and then some waltz, and then everybody's slow dancing, you know, to this like waltz, you know, and then like kind of, it's good. It's cool to look out there and see people dancing.
That's
cool.
So, that's very cool. Well, guys, we're running out of time.
Okay.
All right.
How can people get a hold of you if they want to hunt you down?
We have a Facebook, Instagram. We've got a website, noondaydevils.com. There's a contact form on there.
Cool.
Noondaydevils@gmail.com.
And a big show Saturday, your first record release party.
Yes.
At
Cornish Pasty Company.
The Beast, yeah.
At The Beast.
Cool, man.
Yeah. Everybody's welcome.
And congratulations.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you very much.
I look forward to your long career and all of your placements on TV and film.
Thanks so much, Uncle.
All right, guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.